What's up, everybody? It's Roger and James here from the This Kingdom Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking all about the Marvel comics we've been reading over the last week. But before we do that, remember to hit that subscribe button on YouTube or the podcast services to keep up with our daily episodes. So first off, James, what have you been reading this past week?
Quite a number of books this week, but I think we should probably start with one of the big launches for the week, which is Shuri number one, launching off the back of the Black Panther movie earlier this year.
Yeah. I read it. I'll be honest, I was disappointed. The biggest problem I had with it was the art style from what it looked like on the cover, which I thought looked stunning. I was really in on it. When I opened it up and started reading it, it felt a little bit cheap. It felt a little bit basic. And the actual story itself wasn't that bad. The whole idea of her having to take over the mantle because Black Panther's lost in space for some reason and they wanted to go into space. And so she's going to have to take over, and it shows her, like, it makes sense for them to try and push her as a strong character. And I think they're very much aware of following the success of the Black Panther movie that they actually want to push her more as one of the stronger females. But the artwork, I think, let it down on this one.
Yeah, I'm not horribly keen on the art. I don't think I have the same reaction to it as you do. I'm okay with it, but it's not what I would look for in most books. It's got a kind of cartoonish, angular, stylized look to it. The story is okay, but not much happens in this book. Not much at all. It tends to be a lot of setup. You know, who is Shuri? Because even though a lot of people were introduced to her in the Black Panther movie, she's actually very different in the comics. This isn't the first time she's worn the Black Panther mantle, for instance, in the books. She tends to be more of a leader and less of an inventor. And I think it's kind of one of those situations where they really do want to capitalize on the success of the character from the movie, just like they're going to try and build on the success of Killmonger, because he's got his own series coming out in the near future. But the character is so different from the movie that it's, I don't know what audience they're targeting with it, because you can't get the people from the movies, because they'll be like, well, this is nothing like her. Wear her little, you know, panther fists, and why isn't she in the tech division and all this stuff? I mean, she does invent in this book. She's got the wings that she invents, and there's other stuff that she's obviously working on. But based on the last couple of pages, that's not really the focus. She's taking up the Black Panther mantle, at least temporarily, and it'll be interesting to see how they balance that.
Yeah, it was okay. I don't know if I'll carry on with it. I jumped then over to 4, I think it was 4-6, and that was this one's gone a bit bonkers. It was like 4 in the future with his granddaughters meeting up with Logan, who is then got the Phoenix Force, and they go back to a reconditioned Earth and fight Doctor Doom, who has taken over the powers of Doctor Strange and Iron Fist and the Ghost Rider. And then they end up battling through each other, and then the Phoenix gets caught up in the Forehammer, and as soon as it got to the end of it, I'm like, I've got this. Is like they've literally gone right, and let's throw it all in the air and just chuck it all into one. It's like I read it and I'm like, what on earth is going on after such that amazing forerun with Jane Foster and it all making sense and it all being nice. And this series, I'm in the 6 episodes and I'm still, it's like they literally just were like, right, we're going in such a completely different direction and this is just complete bonkers. And I don't know if I like it or not. It's a bit like...
I mean, I didn't read this issue. I dropped Thor after 3 issues. And we both raved about the Jane Foster comics. I, of course, loved the earlier Jason Aaron books from the God Bomb and Godbreaker story arcs. I think Aaron should have ended his run on this book as soon as the Jane Foster story was over. You know, the death of Thor was a great end cap to his stuff. That should have just been it. Let somebody else take over. But I can't comment on this specific issue.
It's kind of weird thing of like after like the death of Thor and stuff and Odinson kind of coming in, I felt like that was a story that they like wanted to kind of build on and maybe bring back Odinson as Thor and make him worthy and all the rest of it. And it just felt a little bit like, no, we're just going to hit the reboot button. Thor in the Avengers, and this is now him in the future. I mean, this has got nothing to do. It's just very, I mean, it's just almost that thing of like they're having a bit of fun and trying to like, I would almost say like reset it so people aren't thinking of that run of of Jane Foster. They're just having a bit of fun with four, of like putting them in different locations and stuff, and him basically being an immortal god. And I don't know, it was strange, it was different. It certainly wasn't where I was expecting it to go. It's certainly a big battle and some big things in there, but just seeing Doom with every power that he's accumulated from every all these different things was just odd.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm I dropped the Thor. As far as I'm concerned, it finished with the death of Thor in the Jane Foster run. I'll give it a try probably when a new writer pops on, whenever that is. But for now, it's just not on my radar.
Strange. I feel like they had this a big hype about all like rebooting all the series, and I'm finding that with a lot of them, they're just not clicking at all. Like three or four episodes in, they're just floundering around and. They had all this hype for going back to number ones. And by a Spider-Man, I don't feel like anything's really kind of keeping my attention going.
Yeah, I don't know. It's either way.
Yeah. So what else have you been reading?
Let's see. I'm going to knock in two books here, kind of contrast them. The first is The Life of Captain Marvel Part 4, which is as we're now aware, the complete reboot of her origin, going back and retconning everything because I'm assuming for the movie, but I'm not going to spoil what the retcon is. It's a big one though. And I think that have you read it?
Yes, I did read it. I've been enjoying this series. I love the artwork. I think it's very well written. Again, I'm coming in as a newbie. So I've only seen her popping up in video games and stuff. So I've never really read anything to do with Captain Marvel. So this series is my introduction to the character. So it might change my perception of it a bit because that's the twist didn't really hit me because I didn't know. So this is, I don't know, maybe if this is who I'm the person that they're actually trying to tell this story to. Yeah. So we might be why I'm probably enjoying it more than you, baby.
Yeah, and it's not even like a continuity, you know, freak kind of thing. It's more of a, when you get down to it, the change to her origin is at a very fundamental level. And my personal feeling on it is that doing this change kind of negates a lot of what made the character very interesting in the first place. Because before she was Miss Marvel, she was an Air Force pilot. She was the head of security at a top secret base. She was all these things in the 1970s when women really didn't make it in the American Armed Forces, and she was at the top of her game, and she was one of the best that America had, you know, in the comic universe. With this retcon, it goes away from her accomplishing all those things because of her grit, determination, skill, tenacity, all that stuff, into, oh, she had an inherent advantage built into her from the very beginning. And I really feel that kind of takes away a lot of the character. It just, she had an advantage, just like all the other characters did. So,
But it also, I think, Mike, as a newbie kind of coming into it, it also actually sets her up of why she's kind of a superhero. Because she's not just, she was involved in an accident or she found something. You know, there was a reason for it. I mean, kind of, yeah, it was definitely, again, I'm coming in with no back knowledge of her origin. So for me, it's a little bit easier to, maybe that's the thing. As a newbie, it's actually quite easy to accept it. It's actually very, it just ticks a couple of boxes and it moves on. Whether or not they do this with the movie, I don't know. I'm guessing they might do, but yeah.
It's probably going to be a little half and half.
Yeah. I mean, I've really enjoyed this book because I feel like I'm doing some research before Captain Marvel comes out and kind of getting to know this character a little bit more.
Yeah, and to be fair, her original origin story was that she got her powers from a machine called the Psyche Magnetron, which transferred the original Captain Marvel's powers to her. Not transferred, copied, because they both had the powers. And honestly, that's a really stupid origin. So I can totally see them getting rid of that and getting her powers in another way. But I still stand by, this negates what made her as a person so fascinating before she had powers.
Yeah.
Now, and also, because that was what defined her for most of her early life on into, you know, the military, which she became a major and all that. It also fundamentally changes the character after she got powers because she was informed by who she was before she had powers, etc. So it is kind of nitpicky, I will admit that. But at the same time, I think it is a very fundamental change to to what the foundation of the character is. And I'm not particularly happy about that. I think this is a change that makes her a less interesting character than she was before the change. But yes, I agree. It does simplify things significantly if you're coming in fresh to the character. So a little give, a lot of take. I think on par, she lost more than she gave, or more than she got. She lost more as a character, but it's also undeniable that it simplifies things. So
yeah, a really good miniseries. I've read all four. Looking forward to finishing off the fifth. It just like I said, it's been nice for me as a kind of just. This is a nice little series, and I like to say this is where the artwork does match up to the covers. I feel like this is, you know, the covers represent what the artwork is going to be like. It is a top tier kind of artwork to me for Marvel. So that's a good one. So what was the other one you read?
I've actually read two other ones, but I was going to group this one up with Captain Marvel, and this is Mr. and Mrs. X number 4. This is continuing Rogue and Gambit flying around in space and doing all sorts of just weird stuff. And this is actually the book that I kind of wanted Life of Captain Marvel to be. It's just off the wall, bonkers, sci-fi, exploring space, weird stuff happening, people turning into eggs, just crazy writing. I'm not going to give context for that. It makes more sense in the book, though. It's just a plain, fun book written by Kelly Thompson, and it is one of my favorite books of the week. It's a treat to read. It's a lot of fun. I don't care about Rogue or Gambit. I mean, I've always kind of liked them because they're X-Men, and I've always been an X fan. But I was never like, Rogue and Gambit are one of the one true pair, and they should always be together. I was like, nah, whatever. They're two characters. They're fun. But this book has really grabbed me. I'm really enjoying this. I'm looking forward to seeing where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, I read the first one. I didn't really carry on with it because, I don't know, it kind of caught me. One of the books I read as well was What If Ghost Rider? Mm-hmm. And this one was a strange one. It didn't really set it up very well, and it was a little bit confusing. I found it a little bit confusing. It was like battling. Did you read this one at all? Was it Punisher?
Last week.
Yeah, it was. It was a really odd one because it was like heavy metal, like had three people from like metal going into Marvel, and now he's Robbie's working at Marvel, and then they go in the future and the monsters coming out, and it was just like, I don't know what this is. I was a bit disappointed because whereas like the last two What Ifs I really enjoyed, this one was it was a waste for me.
I mean, I haven't read it. Like I said last week when you talked about the Punisher one, I do like the idea of the What If stories. They're a lot of fun to kind of see what's going on, what else could have happened, especially when you don't have the rules of having to worry about having to continue the story on. You can have consequences in these stories. But I browsed this one briefly in the shop because,
yeah,
you know, the Punisher one last week did look interesting to me, and I considered getting it. It was just kind of a heavy week, so I didn't. And I was thinking, all right, maybe I'll take a look at this one. And I read like sporadically a couple pages. And it's like, nope, this is too weird for me. I don't know what the heck's going on. You're talking about the real world, Tom Brevoort, CBS Sibelski, who is the editor in chief of Marvel, shows up, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I'm not paying for this.
Yeah. So what else were you reading this week?
I read two other books this week. One of them, talk about real fast, Unstoppable Wasp, number one. Anybody who's listening to the podcast for a while will know I absolutely adored the first Unstoppable Wasp series from last year, 2017. And this was the first issue of the new series. I have to admit, it didn't quite grab me as much as the previous series did. I think part of that was there's a very different tone to this. Because the first one was an introduction to the character. I'm talking about the original series. It was an introduction to the character. She was new. She was fresh. We didn't know really much about her. And so a lot of the energy from the first couple of issues was, who is this character? Her experiencing the world for the first time, all the crazy stuff, her happiness at being able to use memes and stuff. And this was a much more focused book. You know, she's already established. She's got her group of girls that she coordinates with. And it was still good, but it didn't quite have that magic. And I think part of it was also it came out the same week as Shuri, number one, which is almost an identical story to Unstoppable Wasp, number one. Obviously, there's differences. The council, the Elephant Trunk Council in Shuri, number one, is the same as the girls' group over here, but you know, they have different objectives and whatnot. But I felt like I was reading the same book from a different angle with this. So I really enjoyed it. And I do absolutely recommend the original series for anyone who's looking for a good kind of all ages book, particularly if you want to give it to a younger reader for motivation or whatever. But I'm going to kind of wait on this one, read a couple more issues and see if it can recapture some of that energy from the first series.
Yeah, I skipped that one. I'm not a big fan of Wasp. I think the character as a whole just doesn't work for me. It doesn't really appeal.
And that's fair. If we were talking about Janet Van Dyne, who's the original Wasp and the Wasp who shows up, the older Wasp who shows up in Ant-Man and the Wasp, I'd probably agree with you. And this is not Hope Van Dyne. This is not the character from Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp, one played by Evangeline Lilly. This is a completely different character. This is a different take on the Wasp character. And I find it a lot more interesting, mostly because it doesn't really have to do with her powers. It has to do more with her experiencing the world from a completely fresh and new point of view. You know, she is a person who was hidden away for a very, very long time, and now she's popping out into our world. And rather than seeing the horrible stuff in our world that's going on, you know, all the cultural stuff that's been dredged up the last couple of years, she's seeing all the cool, fantastic, like, she came from the 60s and got dropped now kind of deal. And like, it's like living in a sci-fi wonderland kind of thing.
It's Austin
kind
of Powers. Cool. Yeah, baby.
You know, a little bit less adult situations, but yeah. We'll just leave it at that one. So
yeah, my final one. Yeah.
I was going to say there was one more book, and I think it's the same one for both of us.
Yeah. It was, Darth Vader, the again, kind of him building his castle, him kind of setting up some other force on this planet. Wasn't sure on this one. This one was a little bit of the kind of thing of, it's that really weird thing of like sitting here like a couple of days later going, what happened? It was a bit weak.
It was weak, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it wasn't really a Darth Vader comic this month. Even though it's part four of this story arc, it really was just like, okay, so you know that head that's been floating around the past couple of issues? It's just kind of a head. Looks like a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. It's actually the semi-sentient helmet of an ancient Darth architect. It's like, okay, cool. I didn't need a whole issue dedicated to this. You could have just told me he was an evil Lord of the Sith who had a thing for architecture, and that would have been all we needed. Instead, we got the history of Darth Momin for 20 pages. It's just like, I'm ready for the story to continue. Let's move on with something else. So, you know, it's still fun. It's still a decent comic, but this was definitely a miss in the Darth Vader category for me.
It still feels like they're desperately trying to turn this castle into something. They've got this idea in their head that it's this like massive castle of, and it's like, it's a building. And I know they're trying to make it a bit of a thing, but like, it was never a big thing in Star Wars, and you're trying to make it this thing. I think between the Tales of the Vader Castle and this story going on and trying to push it in, it just, and the Lego set and all the rest of it, it just feels like they've got this concept and they're trying to do this synergy to try and force us into believing that this building, that this castle is now some kind of built on something more elaborate than it actually is. It feels a little bit like they're forcing it too hard.
Yeah, it definitely does. But it feels like they've got to be building to something with this, right? It can't just be like, oh, you know, that castle was in Rogue One, so here's the castle and its story. I feel like they have an intention behind this, but I have no idea what it is. And this is also coming, you know, in the past couple of weeks, they canceled another Darth Vader miniseries was going to be written by Chuck Wendig. I don't know if it had anything to do with the castle or not, but I feel like that probably would have tied in some way. Now it's
that was the writer that got fired now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was called Shadow of Vader, I think, and Chuck Wendig got released off of it for some tweets, or historically some tweets, very much similar to the James Gunn situation, but his tweets are far more recent and he's far less apologetic about it. Mm-hmm. So that's as deep as we're going into that. But I'm guessing that Shadow of Vader probably was also going to have some form of take on the Mustafar castle. Cause it's like you said, it feels like they're going somewhere or they're pushing this. And I have to assume they're going somewhere with it, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're just like, hey, it's a thing. We can't really do much until episode 9 comes out. So here's this other thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly possible.
It just feels odd that they're trying to build this building up that, because especially as well, bar the Death Star, nothing really in Star Wars, there's never really a building. I mean, now we have like the Jedi Council, but generally as a whole, buildings aren't really a big thing for Star Wars because they're always on the move and moving around. It just feels a bit odd, but nevertheless, I'm sure. I think it's worth, because it never got referenced in the first three movies with Darth Vader. It's like, well, this is, you're forcing it because he didn't use this in the story of him. You know, that was his story. It wasn't there. You know, you're trying to force it in afterwards.
Yeah, and this isn't even in the previous extended universe either. As far as I can remember, he didn't have a castle on Mustafar. The only significance of this planet was that it was where he dueled Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was that there was no other story that happened there. So now that they're pushing this, if they're going somewhere with it and it turns into a really cool story, then sure, I'll be very happy that they built up the thing before they actually get to it. But right now, I'm just kind of going, cool. You've got some weird architecture fascination going on right now, which is great, but I'm not really what I'm looking for right now. So we'll see where they go with this.
Yeah, but we'd love to know what you guys are reading at the moment. Let us know in the comments below. I'd love to know what you guys think of it all. Go check us out over at thiskingdom.com. Where can they find you, James?
You can find me, heroiclegacy.com.
And on that note, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.